Good evening. Last week we covered holidays and things of that nature. So this is a little bit more. The truth is, this class could have gone first. Maybe should have gone first, but it's okay. So these are fashionable clothing, secular calendar. How much should we look outward? This page one is kind of the theory, and page two are a couple of practical things that, you know, how does it apply to various things. So we'll take a look. We've got to do the theory first, and then we'll see how it applies and how it plugs into various cases that come up. So the Rambam writes, source number one, this is kind of just straight out, in holchem b'chukas ovdei kochavim v'lo medamin lahen lo b'malbush v'lo b'shar v'chiyotzi behen lo b'seyar v'chiyotzi behen, that you shouldn't go in the ways of the chukos, the principles or the ideas of the non-Jews, v'lo medamin lahem, you shouldn't be similar to them, not in your clothing and not in your hairstyles. Okay, v'chiyotzi behen, similar things. Shneemar v'lo telchu b'chukas hagoyim. V'neemar uvechukos seichem lo seileichu. That there's three psukim and one more. V'neemar yisham alocha petenak yishachareim. Right, the three psukim. One is don't go in the ways of the non-Jews. Another one is in their ways you shall not travel. And the third one is you should watch yourself lest you
become ensnared
after them. Okay, great. Hakol b'inyan echad humazit. They're all the same thing. Humazit shelo yidma lehen. That we command that we shouldn't be like them. El yeh hayisrael moved al mehem v'yaduim malbushu v'shar ma'isav kamoshu who moved al mehem b'mudah v'deosav. We should be separate from them, and we should know who we are in our clothing and all the things that we do. So, based on that, if I was just to ask just that Rambam, that was the end of the class. Right, so when he says that you should not be like them at all, so what does that sound like? That sounds like nothing. It sounds like most of the way, I think, pretty much everybody, except for maybe the women amongst us, at least the way most of the men are dressed, we're going to be in a lot of trouble, because that kind of excludes, most of these are not traditional Jewish dress, suits, ties, shirts, sweaters, all those kinds of things. We should all dress in ways that are particularly different. It almost sounds from this Rambam that we're supposed to actively be different. We're supposed to seek for ways to be different. Anybody else, you see that, as opposed to not fall into being the same, the Rambam seems to be saying you should actively look for doing things differently. So do we assume like that Rambam? Do we not assume like that Rambam? And if we do assume like it, we'd like to say we assume like it. If we do assume like that Rambam, so how does that fit into our regular activity? That's really the topic of tonight's shiur. So so really the sugi begins with a Mishnah, and it's kind of a bit of a gory Mishnah. Some people may like that and some may not. But this is kind of the beginning Gemara for all of these discussions. So the Mishnah tells us, it's a Mishnah in the middle of Sanhedrin discussing the four ways that that Beis Din kills people. So there's four different ways. One of them is hereg. One of them is that you kill them, you shach them. That's the punishment for several of the prohibitions. So the Mishnah wants to know, well, how does that work? Mitzvah Sanayarag, and what is the mitzvah of killing that Beis Din performs? So Hayamatizin Esrosha Besayif. So the Mishnah says, well, you cut his head off with a sword. Well, how is that? Kederach Shal Malchus Osa. Like the non-Jews do, like the kings do. Right? We cut their heads off. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer Nivol Hulo. Rabbi Yehuda says, oh please, that's disgusting. Right? Nivol, that's bad. We don't want that. That's not very nice. Ella Manichin Esrosha Al Hasadin Bekotates Bekupitz. Rather, what do? You stick his head on a, sounds like a block, and you knock it off with a cleaver. So Amrulos, they responded to him, in misa minuvelis mizu. Right? There's nothing more disgusting than that. Right? That's terrible. That's awful. So what's the discussion going on in this Mishnah? So the Gemara picks up from this discussion. Right, again, the Chacham, the original thing is you do it like the non-Jews do, like the kings do. Rabbi Yehuda's response is that's terrible, rather do this in this ultimately fabulously disgusting way. And then they respond to him and say, well, that's really disgusting, what were you talking about? So the Gemara tells us, like, picks up the discussion. So Amar Lehen Rabbi Yehuda Chacham. So Rabbi Yehuda responds to the Chachamim, Afani Yodeya Shemisa Minu Velasi. So I know that this death that I'm describing is really, disgrace. I need a better word, but is bad and disgusting. Aval ma'ese, what am I supposed to do? Shari amra Torah uvichukosehem lo seilechu. The Torah tells us that we can't do it in the ways that the non-Jews do it. So what does that sound like? It sounds like once the non-Jews have taken some form of action, we're not allowed to follow it. So v'rabbanon. The Rabbanim respond, Kevin dichsiv saif b'oraisa lo minayu kagam rinan. So the Rabbanim respond by saying, wait a second, the idea of having a saif, the idea of using a sword, is actually articulated in the Torah. So if that's the case, we haven't learned it from them, we made it up ourselves. The ilo temahachi, but if you don't say that, tadetanya, we have a following braisa, sorfin al hamelachim velo midarchei ha'amori. So this is another concept that's even a little bit further out there. There is a concept of burning the stuff of the kings. Why are we burning the stuff of the kings? So the king is no longer alive, the king is dead. So in a way, we are in a way of showing honor to the kings, right? We take all of their stuff, and we burn it such that people won't do it afterwards. Remember when you were in Shir, Shefti used to always point out that no one else will ever get... use of it again. That when we were in Shir, Shefti used to point out that the non-Jews even do it with their wives. We don't do that. That we don't do. But we do have the concept that once a woman was married to a king, no one else is allowed to marry her again. Right? It's a whole story in the beginning of Malachim that has the claim to the kingdom, etc. Well, that's our principle. That once somebody was married to a king, so nobody else is allowed to marry them. Maybe another king is, but whatever. We limit that. So it's just as they won't marry their wives, right? Because once she was married to a king, no one else. Right? So all of their stuff, we're going to take all of their things and burn it so that nobody else will ever be able to use it again. So the Braisa tells us, three lines before the end of that Gemara in source number 2, Sorfin al hamalachim velo midarchei ha'amori, that we burn for the kings, velo midarchei ha'amori. That's not a problem of following the ways of the Amoraim. So hechi sarfin, and how do we do that? V'aksivu v'chu koseihem lo seilechu. Doesn't it say that we can't follow the ways of the non-Jews? Elakevin dich Srefa Boraisa, that it talks about Srefa in the Torah. Where does it talk about it? There's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu Misarfos Avosech, that we're going to burn the things of your fathers, right? It's a reference to this idea. It's found in Tanakh. It's found in the book of Yirmiyahu. So Lavinayu Kagamrinan. So that shows that we didn't learn it from them. Bahachanami, so to hear, Kevan Dichsiv Saif Boraisa Lominayu Kagamrinan. Since the idea of using a sword is mentioned in the Torah, we clearly did not learn it from them. So what's the implication of this Gemara? The implication is, at this point, the implication is that that even if the non-Jews are doing something, and even if the non-Jews came up with it on their own, if we have a source for it in our literature, it seems from this Gemara, at least someplace in Tanakh, we see in Tanakh that people are doing it already, so we no longer have a concern of uvechu koseichem lo seileichu. We no longer have to worry about this prohibition that we're following in the ways of the non-Jews. Okay? We're clear so far? Arguments? Complaints? No? We're good? Okay. So Tosfos, if we had longer amount of time, we would first go and actually look in this source in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, where it talks about the Sorf and Halmalachim. But we don't have that much time, rather we'll just see the brief quote of it that appears in Tosfos, which is source number 3. So the Tosfos writes, Tema is like a question, a wild question, big question. Tema, demashma hacha, de afal gav de chukahi, that it sounds like from here, that even though it's a chok, kevan dichsiv boraisa shari, once it's written in the Torah, it's okay. Right? That's what we just said. Right? Once it's written in the Torah, it's okay. However, uveperakama de mesechas avodah zarah, in the first parak of avodah zarah, where that halacha of burning the stuff of the king, where it actually is spoken about there, it asks parich v'sreifa chukahi. The Gemara there actually asks, wait a second, Srefa is a chok, implying that Srefa, does Srefa have any reason for it? And the Gemara answers that it's not a chok. What's going on? This, if you look in the Gemara itself, the Gemara is a little bit broader, longer than what Tosfos is expressing here. The Gemara there asks, wait a second. Are we allowed to burn for the kings? Why not? Isn't it something that the non-Jews do in the form of a chok? And the implication there is, and they're probably doing it for avodah zarah. And the Gemara says, no. They're not really doing it for avodah zarah. Rather, it's there's a good reason for it. It's showing respect to the king. And then the Gemara goes on and says, oh, and don't worry about uvuchosem lo sedechu either, because we have a pasuk that talks about it, that pasuk in Yirmiya that we quoted earlier. Yes?
I don't get how it's a
chok. The chok means that there's no reason for it.
Right.
And the Gemara suspects, the Gemara hasn't yet answered, well, there's a very good reason for it, it shows respect to the king. That's,
oh, I
that,
see.
Right? So the Gemara suspects that if there's no reason for it, it probably has to do with Avodah Zarah. Right, so the Gemara has to then say, no, there's a good reason for it, and there's a pasuk. So what's Tosfos's question? So his question is, our Gemara, the Gemara, the first source number two that we quoted, the Gemara Sanhedrin, the implication of that is what? That if there is a source for it in the Torah, or in Nevi'im or Ksuvim, so it's okay, we don't have to ask any more questions. The Gemara and Avodah Zarah's implication is, then no. First we have to make sure that there's nothing having to do with Avodah Zarah. Right? And then, once we get that out of the way, so then we could go ahead and start finding Pesukim for it in our own Torah. We start finding our own verses for it. So Tosfos actually explains it that way. That's the way Tosfos clarifies it. If you look at the end of the second line, where it says V'yud Lamed, that stands for V'yesh Lomar. That's, in 90% of Tosfos, that's the way the answer is introduced. V'yesh Lomar, there are those that explain the Hasam Ka'amar, that over there in Avodah Zarah, Lav Chukahi L'Shem Avodah Zkochavim. Di Havi Chukah L'Avodah Zkochavim, that it's not, it has to first explain that it's not a Chok for Avodah Zarah, because if it was a Chok for Avodah Zarah, Afilu Hava Kasuv Be'oraisa, even if it would have been written in the Torah, Lo Hava Mahani, it still wouldn't have worked. Right? If the non-Jews were using it for Avodah Zarah, even if it talks about our previous Nevi'im, Avram Avinu, doing such a thing, we would not be allowed to use it. It sounds like they've hijacked it. Aval hacha, ayri b'chok, hovdicham, shalol Hashem v'oschucham, dum yidisayif, tekeim d'chsiv b'arayis, lo minayu gamin v'shari. However, once we've already established that it's not a Avodah Zarah, so then we just find a source for it, and then everything is okay. So, this is a very interesting line. It almost seems that the non-Jews could come and hijack parts of our Torah and just say, okay, we're doing it, and if they use it for Avodah Zarah, it'd be no good. So I remember when I first learned this in yeshiva, so I gave the following, I was giving a chabura at those times to high school boys, and the chabura then was on this topic. It was, well, let's say non-Jews come along and say, wow, that tefillin thing, that actually looks pretty neat. Maybe we'll do the tefillin thing for the purposes of Avodah Zarah. Wait a second. What do we do with that, right? Or they decide the matzah thing, that's pretty neat. Or maybe there's a question how far this goes. Does it? What about dini derabbanans? What about other minhagim that they do, right? So where does that fit? Where does that leave us as a non-Jew decides to take up a Jewish practice for the purpose of a Avodah Zarah?
We certainly know that things like hakrava in korbanot and nisu.
Right. Well, how about tefillah? Right. It obviously doesn't work out. So
you have the business about the red shoelaces and the it says in the kitzur in our shulchan aruch.
Right. The Gemara discusses
shoelaces, then we have to do black. But what do you get? Well, they do black. So then,
right. The Gemara discusses that. Right. So based on that Gemara, as well as based on this impossible possibility that we're speaking about, so I think what this Tosfos has to, you have to put the limits on it someplace. You have to explain that that if it's an explicit mitzvah, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling us to do it. So it's sealed. In a way, it's cut off. In a way, there's not going to be any problem. The non-Jews can't hijack that. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu said explicitly, I want you to do this thing, so the non-Jews can't come along and say, well, we're going to take it for Avodah Zarah, and they don't know what they're doing. And then we're stuck. We can't do these mitzvahs anymore. What's this Tosfos talking about? Tosfos is talking about, things that are out there, things that are mentioned that they were done in Tanakh, but there's no, it's not a mitzvah. It doesn't seem like it's a mitzvah to kill people in this particular way. It's not a mitzvah to burn the things of a king. It's a way of doing kavod. So in a way, if they would do it for Avodah Zarah, then we would be cut out from it. Because there's no real. There are other ways of doing kavod. There are other ways of honoring past kings and things like that. I think that's an important distinction that one has to make. Okay, so that's it. Yes.
I read an article that non-Jews are starting to adopt Jewish wedding customs. Chuppah,
Yeah, and then in Korea they're starting to read the Gemara, right? So that means we can't learn Gemara anymore.
And they
what?
And they eat bagels now too.
In Papua New Guinea they say Shema.
As long as they're not offering up the bagels.
Right.
Well, maybe they're square and not round.
But what if they would? Right. Well, that is a question. What if it's something that isn't specifically a Jewish practice? However, the probability is that we don't really paskin like this Tosos. Rather, we probably paskin like the next source on the page, the Beis Yosef, as we've spoken about a few times. The Beis Yosef of the Empire of Yosef Karo. What he did was he collected all previous people, anything that he could get his hand on. He was the first person to boast about his library, as we gave Shiram on over the summer. He was the first person to say, I've collected all of the Svarim, and I've put them all together in order to form the Shulchan Aruch. He became the author of the Shulchan Aruch. So in his Beis Yosef, which was what formed the basis for the Shulchan Aruch, so he quotes a whole lot of sources that certainly at that time would be difficult to find. Here, it's not so difficult to find the Shail Sechuvas Maharik, but it is difficult to find on my computer. So I quoted it from the Beis Yosef. So the Maharik, it's not explicit here, but the Maharik had the following shayla, which we alluded to last week. They asked him, I believe he was in Italy, and in Italy they came up with the idea that the doctors should wear special doctor garments. So they asked the Maharik whether that was an appropriate thing for Jews to wear. I mean, if the non-Jewish doctors are all now walking around with these special garments, so that was an invention by the non-Jews. So would there be a problem for us to copy their rituals? There's a couple of we're on tape. So Maharik explains, and he takes into account these different... That's the background. I don't think the actual case is quoted here in the Maharik. But he explains what his criteria are for there to be a violation of Chukas Hagayim. So the first thing he says, Maharik kolonza, b'shorish peiches, de'ein la'aser mishum chok, ela be'echad mishnei chalakin. Right? It has to be one of two things. Ha'echad hu adavar asher ein tamu nigla. One of them is if the reason is not apparent, k'demash malashon chok, as what it sounds like from the language of chok, the perish Rashi v'Ramban v'Parshas Kedoshim, the chayvin shu osa davar mishuna asher ein bo tam nigla el shehem noagim kain. Right, if a person is not doing it where the reason is not clear. As it sounds like we're in the word chok. I'm sorry, I went back a line. The kevan shu osa davar mishuna, since he's doing something different, asher ein bo tam nigla, there's no apparent reason for it. El sheim noagim kain, but they're just doing it. As niravadai kenim shachachareihem umodalehem di lo kain lama yes hikidvar matuim ahem. Right? If a Jew is doing a strange thing, and the only way for the only possible explanation for it is that the non-Jews are doing strange things. And then what's the reason that the Jew is doing it? The Jew is doing it in order to follow the non-Jews. All right, so that's already this is a pretty big criteria here, right? If the Jew is doing something that is illogical, the non-Jews are also doing the same thing that is illogical, right? And we're following it. So the Maharik says, that what's the reason that the Jew's following it? The only possible reason that the Jew's following it would be to follow the non-Jews. That's a violation of Uvuchukos Seichem Lo Seileichu, as we spoke about last week. So we quoted the Rav Salvechik is quoted as. Is being asked about hypnotism, and he responded by saying that not hypnotism for non-medical purposes, for entertainment purposes. So he responded that it's not a good idea, that it's asa. Why is he said it's asa? Because it's stupid. Those were the words. And the truth is, there was another section to the same, that same paragraph was also discussed the idea of bowing in karate. That's what the Talmidim asked him, what about bowing in karate? Is that okay? So he explained that, no, I don't think he actually uses the term chukas hagayim, but he said it's asur mishum shtus. It's asur because it's stupid. It's asur because it's foolish. There's no reason to do it. Whoever did karate in this room is going to say, what do you mean? That's the way you got to do karate. That's the cultural phenomenon that exists in the Far East, that's right. So the answer would be, yeah. If you're doing it with Far East people, such as that's the accepted mode of saying hello to people, is to bow to them. So okay, so that's okay. There's no concern of Avodah Zarah in that case, and that's the way we shake hands. But in the the West, I guess, here, wherever we are, right? And the regular form of greeting is to shake hands, or if you're in karate, you know, or in boxing is to pound gloves, or whatever the appropriate thing is. So if you don't have to worry about that culture, there's no reason to adopt the foreign culture. All right, I would assume the question might have been asked, again, I'm hypothesizing here, the question might have been asked not whether you can go to if you're going to a dojo to get your karate lessons. All right, I had somebody in Phoenix that was always trying to convince me that I should take up martial arts. That should be my big thing. I don't know why. Right, so if you're going to do that, it's okay. That's the way you're expected to act. So you bow. I think what I assume what Salavage was being asked about was, what about a karate class in Yeshiva University, right? A karate class in Yeshiva University, so we're not bound by the cultural norms of of what they do in regular karate. We're here to learn how to punch, kick, and defend oneself, or break wood.
And the instructor is a Jew.
And the instructor was Jewish, right? So there's no issue of respect there. So I assume that that's what the question was about, and Salvation felt it was no good.
I think that instructor does.
Maybe he does. I don't know. It doesn't necessarily mean that he was followed. I mean, that's just quoting what was quoted.
The suggestion was that even in NYU, if the instructor was not Jewish.
No. He was there was a somewhat famous karate teacher at Yeshiva University.
And I think that he did have students following.
That's the question.
Right.
And more to the point, do they wear Japanese karate garb? I mean, there is a particular uniform that goes with.
So you have to wonder whether there is a reason for that uniform. That it is. It's light fitting clothing, and it's long. You know, how we'll get to clothing, but how do you distinguish in terms of clothing is a very difficult question. We'll get to that. Okay. So what's the second requirement of the Ma'arik, or the second qualifying for the problem of being l'seichem lo seileichu? So he says right in the middle there, it says ve'inyan hasheni asher yishlaser mishum chukas agayim. The second way to ask for something, because chukas agayim l'fi anira l'fi anias daisi hu adav. It seems to me, in my humble opinion, lamadayin dal is often saying, when you say something on your own, you say l'fi anias daisi, in my humble opinion, right? So l'fi anias daisi hu hadavar asher shayach po pritzus derech atzni, right? Pritzus. That's something that is that immoral activity is closely associated with derech atzni is v'anav v'nagu b'agayim gamze aser im halacha kitana debreiz, right? That we try to go in a way of modesty and humility, and if the non-Jews are and if there is something that is out there to do, and that thing is closely associated with pritzus, closely associated with immoral activity, so that is a second thing that one should avoid, possibly out of this iser v'chuseichem lo seileichus. That also would perhaps certain modes of dress might qualify for this prohibition. Yes.
One of the things that I think the Jews should have a problem with is that members of the church wear different colored yarmulkes for, you know, either for status or in the church. So, and they're different colors.
So you should stop wearing yarmulkes?
No, they look like yarmulkes.
No, they are.
Right.
Well, they take it from us. They're not taking it from us. It is a Gemara to talk to wear yarmulkes. I think just because the non-Jewish priests, bishops, etc., cardinals, right? When we but the kippot is actually one of the topics on the next page. So, but it's really the opposite case. It's a question of whether Jews could take them off, not whether we should take them off because of them. But we'll see. We'll see whether that really has its basis in Avodah Zarah or not. This is hard to say.
So, based on the criteria, they could wear the doctor's coats.
Right. So the Ma'arik was saying that it's a good idea to wear doctor's coats. Right. As one of my members in Phoenix was a surgeon. He liked to tell over the story that that when he was still a, what do they call it,
resident.
So he went around. He did. He gave a woman a pelvic examination, and he got finished. He got up and says, "Okay, I'm going to go get the doctor now." And the woman said, "Who the heck are you?" So it's important to be in uniform so that people can identify you and things like that. Okay. Anyways, so v'chasav od shama. So it's also written in the Ma'arik, Shekasav Harambam, Shia HaYisrael, Muvdal Mehem, that Yisrael should be separate. V'yadua mebal musho lo bal chayv l'hishtanus min ha'goyim alko. Right, so he says also there that what the Rambam wrote, so now what's his problem? That the Rambam wrote that there needed to be a distinction. Right? That's how we started off the shiur. The Rambam seems to say that one should look to separate oneself. So Ma'arik is looking at this and saying, well, I gave you qualification A, that it has to be for a possible reason, and the qualification B is that it can't be for pritzus. So that means that most of the clothing that we're wearing in this room, right, fits those two qualifications. So the Ma'arik says, well, what about the Rambam's qualification that we need to, it sounds like, need to separate oneself? So Ma'arik says, no, that's not what the Rambam meant. The Rambam never meant one has to separate themselves. This is what he means. B'chasav od shama, was also written there in the Ma'arik statement. She'kasav Rambam, she'yei ha'yisrael muvdal mehem, v'yadu v'malbusha loba l'chayiv li'hishtanas minagayin. When the Rambam said that the Jews should separate themselves, he wasn't coming to say that we have to be different than Goyim. Al kolpanim sharei kasav achar kach lo yilbosh b'malbush hamiyuchad lahem. Because what the Rambam said following that, he said you shouldn't wear clothing that is singular to them, that is unique to them. V'lam alo lomar hamiyuchad lahem. Why did the Rambam say singular, unique to them? Lim alo yilbosh b'malbush hadom l'malbusham. Right, just say that I don't want to be wear their clothing. Elavadai shelo nesar. Rather, he certainly wasn't prohibiting Ella Malbush Shekfarnis Yachid Lahem. The only thing he was prohibiting was clothing that is unique to them. Upersha Yishol Mimen if they had sneers, some if they davar acher. And Jews should separate from that. So now, what is the unique non-Jewish clothing of the day? I'm not sure I have any examples. I'm just making it up. Maybe pink yarmulkes, red yarmulkes in the ways of the Cardinals.
Tattoos.
What? Well, tattoos is a different prohibition. I'm not sure one would walk around with one of those special collars. Like, that might not be a good idea either. Burkas, okay.
Blue jeans.
So I'm not sure I'd go there. But yeah, there's something. I'm not sure.
Maybe once it would be a toga.
No. If you look at ancient, the Jews, whatever century they lived in, they basically wore.
What do you mean? Not in the books that I read. Just kidding. I don't know. I'm not sure what we could find to be. Maybe if you wore a Notre Dame sweatshirt. I don't know. Something that was unique for non-Jews. I don't have any examples off the top of my head about what would qualify for that. Okay.
Women, your Ashkenazi women started wearing shadows to imitate the French aristocracy of the 1500s, 1600s. Until that time, they were wearing turbans.
Right, but is that hamiyuchad for non-Jews? I mean, we'll talk about that in terms of clothing here.
Yeah, there's a particular reason for that.
Right.
It was fashionable.
It was cold.
No, I thought it was because they stink. They didn't take baths.
I don't know. This is news to me. But there is a good reason for women to wear shaitels. It's not just like, oh, we want to be like the non-Jews, right? That's like qualification A. There's a good reason.
There was a thing to cover your head.
Right.
It didn't say you had to wear. No.
But the reason is that instead of covering one hair with a turban, it would be more fashionable to cover our hair in a regular way. Right, but what's the Ma'arik saying? The Ma'arik is saying there's a good reason for it. Right? I'm not just doing it for no reason. I'm not just doing it to look like them. I'm doing it because, even not standing, even amongst Jews itself, it wouldn't be, okay. So so how is this qualified in Shulchan Aruch? This is the same thing that we read last week, so this all comes down to a psak here in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch writes, "Ein holchem b'chukas ovdi kochavim lo medamim lahem, you shouldn't seek to be like them, lo yilbash ma'bash ha'miyuchad lahem." Again, that key word, you shouldn't wear clothing that is singular to them. Right? Below yigdal tzitzis roshem, kamot tzitzis roshem, you shouldn't, I think, give you haircuts in the way they cut their hair. Below yigaleach mihat studen, you cut the sides, v'yaniach hasar b'emtza, and leave hair in the middle. That's some kind of unique haircut. Sounds like a mohawk. Right? You shouldn't have mohawks. Right? Below yigaleach hasar micheneged panav mi'ozen, v'ozen v'yaniach befer, also some kind of hairstyle that the non-Jews had. Below yivnem mikomos kevinyan heichalos, you shouldn't build our places like the way they built their places, sh'odikokavim, k'sheyichnu subahem rabim, k'moshahem osim, in the places where, so that many people will go, in the way that they do it. Right, so you shouldn't make our buildings in their styles. There should be a unique architecture to shuls. There are those that I think are salvation was against having stained glass windows in shul. Because that, why are they doing that? Doing it because that's the way the non-Jews do it, right? It wasn't a thing unique to us. Now the argument against that is, why are the non-Jews doing it? Because it looks nice. Right, so if it looks nice, then maybe we could. So, okay.
To convey the scriptures over to the illiterate masses.
Okay. So that's a good idea. We had illiterate masses also that need to have conveyed, that we need to have conveyable scripture to. Right? Oh, yes. Thank you, David. So Ella, so now the Rama steps in, and again, it's always important to remember that the Machaber was living amongst non-Jews while the Rama was living amongst mostly Jews, while the Rama was living much more amongst non-Jews. So he quotes the qualifications that we did last week. Ella Yehi moved al mayhem malbushu v'shar ma'is. One should be separate. V'cholza eino aser el bedaver shenagu ba'ovdei kochav mishum pritzis. These things are only aser if the non-Jews are doing it for the purpose of immorality. V'shenagu livush mabushim adumim, like the ones who used to wear red garments. So that was some kind of a hint sign, right? That's the Gemara that you're referring to, right? That they used to have such a practice that that was a clue into what kind of person you were. And the way that their officers are dressed in these fashions. And this is the second qualification of the Ma'arik, right? If they have something that they're doing and there's no reason for it. And he adds an important line here. He says, because maybe if there's no reason for it, we have to be concerned that it came from Avodah Zara. Darkei Amori is a reference to Avodah Zara. V'yesh bo shemetz Avodas kochavim me'avoseim. It actually has a hint of Avodah Zara. So we spoke about that last week. That was why in the early tshuva, Rav Moshe was nervous about permitting Thanksgiving, right? Because he said that it sounds like there might be a Avodah Zarah there. And then later on, it became clear that there wasn't. But if there's a purpose for it, right, that all doctors, it makes sense that they wear doctor's clothing, it's permissible to do. If they do it for honor or another reason, also would be mutter. By the way, I mean, in YU, there's always a question about graduation gowns, right? It's no real purpose to wear a graduation gown, right? So the first qualification is not really a reason why you should do it, but the second reason is because of kavod, so then there's more to rely on. L'chein amru, sorfen al hamalachim ve'enu mishum darkei amori. And therefore it says that when burns, you can burn for the malachim ve'enu mishum darkei amori, right? That's the quote that we had earlier, okay? So that is pretty much our criteria. Our criteria are, if we want to do something and it looks like it's doing something the non-Jews are doing, there better be a good reason for it, and better have nothing to do with immorality. Alright? Those are pretty much the criteria, and now let's see how we plug these in to various issues that come up. So clothing. So Rav Moshe was asked the Shaila. This is a very early tshuva. It's in Chelek Aleph, or Chelek Aleph, Yerdeya Chelek Aleph, from the year Tafshin Yud Gimel. How many years ago was that? I'm not thinking right now.
Yud Gimel.
1653. Something a while ago. This is one of the earlier tshuvas that Rav Moshe wrote in this country. So he was asked about the Davar Malbushim Shemindina Zu. He was asked about the dress in this country. If there's a concern that we're wearing clothing of the non-Jews, and the question was, those people that are now coming from Poland, of course, in Lithuania, they wore suits. They wore fashionable clothing in Lithuania with the fancy glasses. Poland was the land of the Hasidim. Poland was the land where they kept their own separate dress. So now all these Polish immigrants were coming. This is the post-war. They were all coming over. And they're saying, well, how do we dress? What is the appropriate way to dress when we get to this country? So Rav Moshe, it's the tshuva, it's a full page. But here's the key paragraph. He quotes the things that we've been quoting. He quotes the Maharik and he explains the Maharik, and then goes on to say, "V'im kein pashut." It's simple. She'ain shum shemetz iser b'stam begadim. That there is no prohibition in the regular clothing shaloshim v'dinu that they wear here. Asher gam ha'nachrim lovshim begadim elu. Even though the non-Jews wear these clothing, midin malbushei nachrim. The ein behem chashash shemetz akum. They have nothing to do with the avodah zara. V'neichush or superstition. V'gam lo davar tamua el lenoy v'chedoma. The only thing they were really worried about is how they look. So then he comes on and says another thing. Very interesting. Vigam, I'm not sure. Belaz, I'm not sure what that means. By the way, I think ein shayich iser malbushei nachrim. There's also no problem. Da hakimat kol bnei Yisrael lovshin malbushim elu. because really all Jews are dressing this way. All right, to say something all of a sudden very interesting here, right? It's not just who started it, but once it gets accepted amongst the Jews, this is the way everybody dresses. So it's no longer a problem of, because again, that's the way Jews dress. So you can't come along and say, well, it's going like the non-Jews, but all Jews are doing it. Who says that they're the dress of the non-Jews? And therefore he comes on the paragraph on the bottom there, even though people are coming from Poland, they could dress like we're dressing here, which is no problem. They're not changing their clothes, not changing from their religious clothing to their Gentile clothing. They're changing from the way that Jews dress in Poland to the way that Jews dress in America. So therefore Rav Moshe says that there is no there's no issue with changing one's clothing, changing one's mode of dress, just because they came to America. Remember when we once learned this in Shir, so Shachter gave told about this, right? Why should we wear long jackets? We should wear short jackets. It's easier to walk when one wears short jackets than when we wear long jackets. So someone asked him about a tie. He said, Taka, why should we wear a tie? No, maybe we shouldn't wear a tie. All right, and then moved on. So, of course, it was really annoying when he did that. But this Rav Moshe seems to explain the tie also. Because the tie is not, it might have been originated by non-Jews, but once it's become so widespread among Jewish people to wear this, nobody looks at a tie and says, that's non-Jewish clothing. Right, that's not non-Jewish clothing, that's clothing. And that's the way people dress today. Right.
Yeah.
Right. It could be. Right.
Clearly, our groups do.
The Harvard's is
uniformly, they don't wear them.
Yeah.
I differ.
Does that mean that the first Jews who started to wear the non-Jewish clothing were
right? So that's always a problem. Now, I remember one time someone pointed out that someone mentioned blue jeans before, right? So blue jeans might be chukas again. Who invented blue jeans? Right. So how do you draw the line and say that well, it's chukas hagoyim? We know it's chukas hagoyim. It was made by a Jew. So these gedarim are very difficult to say. I think Rav Moshe is saying, I'm sitting here in the year 1950, whatever. I'm looking out of my apartment on the way, and I see this is the way everybody dresses, and I don't think there's a problem. Now, the original Jews that came, look. Original Jews that came.
So
yeah.
Who asked this question? Was it a chassid or like a sort of a... Because the Hasidim still don't
Svi
dress like...
Svi Yehuda Teichman. No, that's the wrong one. Binyamin Zucker.
The Hasidim, if they were Hasidim, they don't dress...
He was a Rav HaMuflag. That's what it says. Who asked the question?
Some people clearly don't
Yeah. People ask the question that are interested in hearing his answer. I assume the people that asked the question were people that came came off the boat and says, we want to acculturate. We don't want to be in that community. Is it mutter for us who came from Poland? Is it mutter? Is it permissible for us to dress that way? I assume that's the way the question was raised.
In Russia, they adopted the black long coat and the strimal from the people that came.
Right. That's what everyone says. Well, the strimals are mabushe nachri as well. Okay, maybe originally, but then it wasn't that way anymore. So it changed over. Yes, okay. So kippot. There's a whole literature on why people wear kippos, and why men wear kippos at least. There's a whole bunch of reasons. There are a couple of passages in the Gemara that seem to indicate this idea of an appropriate way of dress. Appropriate way of dress is to wear a kippah and things like that. There are things like that out there, but there's still everybody is scratching their heads, trying to figure out why we wear kippahs as man hazeh. So the Taz is one of the is a commentator inside of the Shulchan Aruch. So he explains. I'll tell you what. Nearly, it appears to me, sheish iser gamer mitam acher dahinu kevan shechok hu achshav bina akum. That now there's another reason. He says this might not have been the original reason, but now there's another reason to wear kippahs. Why is that? Because the non-Jews today take off their kippahs. Right, that used to be that everybody used to walk. This is already a couple hundred years ago. Right, came in shechoku asher bina akum sheosin kein tamid takeif sheyoshin porkin mealeim akova. That they immediately take off their hats. V'im kein zenichla v'chavuchu seichem lo seileichu. So for us to take off our hats would be a violation of vuchu seichem lo seileichu. So that is a statement that the Taz makes. I remember someone told me that. That the right wing world is always anti JFK. Why are they anti JFK? because he was the first president not to wear a hat at his inauguration. So for all the besides all the other reasons that one might have an issue, right? That was like, oh, he like, and it was like a very cold day, and he wanted to like, you know, stick it. Yeah.
This is talking about when you come into indoors. That's when they think of the hat.
Right. Well, he is saying, he says, it's inappropriate for a person to not wear hats. I mean, it's all the way in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, where it talks about ways of getting dressed. So he says that now, it's a long passage of the Taz, he's explaining all the things that wearing kippahs, and at the end he says, and this idea that that you take off your hat right when you come to the house, that's terrible. Now, whatever you want to say about yarmulkes, in fact, he even says that for that reason, you could put a hand on top of your head, because that way you'll be clear, you're not talking like it's going to be hard to eat. But that way you're not acting like the Najis. He says that's okay, you know, for this reason. But he says that in the way I'm looking out at that, in the 16th century, I think, or the 17th century when the Taz lived, he says it's not, that's the way the Najis are doing, and therefore we have to keep it on. So the Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in a tshuva.
Does that mean they used to make brachot without a
kippah? What do you mean? It always used to be that they wore hats. In the 1600s, the Najis started this custom of taking off one's hat.
When you walk into the house.
When you walk into the house. So Taz is saying, whatever you do, don't do that. Right, that's not a proper thing to do. So it does talk there about putting a hand over your head for brachot. That is there. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a response here. Now, it's actually pretty interesting. The you know, the RJJ journals that came out, you know, those like little pamphlets that have been coming out now for 30 years or so. So in volume 2, the person has an article on Chukas Hagayim, volume 2. So he keeps writing, he keeps mentioning, and Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote to me in a private letter this, that, and the other thing. I said to myself, private letter, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Chukas Hagayim. So I remember last week, right, we quoted the second tshuva, the later tshuva of Thanksgiving, we quoted from Rav Moshe Feinstein. So in fact, the letter that was written to him is printed in the eighth volume of Igros Moshe, which came out after Rav Moshe passed away. So it's dated later, it's dated Tufshin Mem Aleph, right, not very long ago. And it was written to the author of that article, Moreno Rav Tzvi Yehuda Teichman, right, it's the same person, I don't know who he is, but he has an article there, and he has the schus of having a tshuva from Rav Moshe written to him here in Igros Moshe Chelek Ches. So he talks there about kippot, and he explains. He says that perhaps the reason was is that that was the way the non-Jews were acting, if you should keep your kippah on. But Rav Moshe was asked about, well, what about people in offices, people that have jobs, the doctors, whatever, that they feel that it would harm their livelihood if they'd be wearing their kippah. So then it is okay to take one off. So Rav Moshe responds that it is okay, because why is a person taking off their yarmulke? So it's a little bit of a fine line. Why is he taking off his yarmulke? He's not taking off his yarmulke to be like the non-Jews, he's taking off his yarmulke in order to make more money. There's a little. He says it a little bit sharper than that, but that's really what he. But he's not. He doesn't say it himself. The Mishnah Berurah has a line like that, and the Aruch HaShulchan has a line like that. But he says here, "Lo shayach laser zem yishum halav duchasein lo chaseichet." So he says, you read from the beginning, that they sit with the head uncovered, that everybody knows that has nothing to do with beliefs in their religions. Even those that don't believe in anything, right? They also walk around without anything that's covered or anything like that. So therefore, there's no concern of avodah zarah anymore. So therefore, you don't have to worry about the taz, and you don't have to worry about that. It says, and even though they do this. That we see that the reason that they're doing it is not because of some religious idea, but they're doing it because for their own benefit. Now, who's Latovas who? Who's it referring to? Is it referring to the non-Jews that are doing it for their own benefit, or the Jews that are doing it for their own benefit? It's unclear, but that's what he's saying. Today, nobody associates taking off one's yarmulke with the voters are. Now, I would add that might not necessarily be true 30 years later, right? That it was true then, but today, it depends on one's situation, what business one is in, and what city one is in, and what a person's subjective circumstances are. But it could be today that if a person takes off their yarmulke, so then maybe it is to be like the non-Jews. I mean, 30 years ago, where you couldn't earn a living, why was I trying to do it? I wasn't trying to be like the non-Jews. I was trying to do it in order to earn a living. I was trying to do it because that's going to benefit me. Today, one can make an argument that doesn't really matter anymore. Right? The people that are out in the business world can argue with me whether yes, whether no. There are those that do and those that don't, etc. But now, 30 years later, one could make an argument that doesn't really make that much of a distinction anymore. So maybe it would be more of a requirement now to keep it on. That's my own little ha'ara on this tshuva of Rav Moshe. Okay, and then one more, two more little pieces here. One is the calendar. It was in the title, so I had to mention it. The Rav Avadi Yosef has a tshuva about whether it is appropriate to write in a to use non-Jewish dates, especially because they may have been based on also non-Jewish ideas. And he explains that also, the reason why, the same idea, the reason why I'm using the non-Jewish date, why do I use a non-Jewish date? Was I want to pay homage to the non-Jewish calendar? No, the reason I use non-Jewish dates is I want to communicate with people. So therefore, Rav Avadi Yosef says that he thinks that it's perfectly okay to use non-Jewish dates. Now, the two paragraphs later in that same tshuva, he goes on, and this is like something that he did without a computer. His own brain is the computer. He then goes on and has an entire paragraph of quoting earlier achronim that use non-Jewish dates. Right? He just rattles them off. I just put the first couple of lines, but there's an entire paragraph. He quotes it from Meshachne, he quotes it from Sam Sofer, he quotes it from Ram Padua. He goes on and quotes a long list of people also that all use non-Jewish dates in their correspondences with other people. Now there may be a problem. There may be a problem with using non-Jewish date to recognize the deities. How does one do that? By adding the word, the name, the letters AD. That might be a problem. So I'm using the dates, and then using the date to recognize something that is not Jewish. AD stands for, anybody know? I forgot the...
Adam, what, again?
Anno Domini. I mean, from...
The year of the Lord.
Right, the year of the Lord. So that's not a good idea. That I would not add to our dates, but just using the
what?
Not in my diploma.
No.
I have mine upstairs if you want to take a look. Yes?
Something also about alluding to the secular month in terms of writing the date as opposed to using numbers.
Yeah, there is.
To not use the names?
Yeah.
All of these he uses the names. That's what he's pointing out
here.
And look through here, he uses the names.
The folks who did.
Yeah.
And just use whatever system they were in. Okay.
So the one more piece that comes up every year.
We also use for davening. We go from Tempelcha. That's based on in our tefillah going from.
Well, that's not really based on that. It's really based on the what's it called? The equinox and whatever. Now we in our sitters, it doesn't. People aren't right. The halfway through the winter equinox or whatever, no one's going to know what you're talking about, so they put the English date in. But it's not based on the English date. The Gemara didn't figure that out, saying, December 4th seems like a nice day, let's reserve that on as the day. Or this year, December 5th. Right? We had that problem already. But fine. So one more little thing. The Vilna Gaon actually used to raise a big fight every year that he claimed. The Vilna Gaon is quoted as saying, Vilna had a more chamer shita when it came to Chukas HaGaim. It's quoted on the bottom of Shulchan Aruch as disagreeing with the Ma'arik, disagreeing with his proofs and understanding the Gemaras in a different way that we quote all the way from the beginning. And the Vilna Gaon felt that the only way that one can get out of Chukas HaGaim if it clearly was not invented by non-Jews. If it wasn't invented by non-Jews, and if Jews wouldn't have come up with it, and if Jews would not have come up with it on their own, you're not allowed to use it from non-Jews. That's what the Vilna Gaon held. So Vilna Gaon had a shita, and it's quoted in Mishnah Berurah, and quoted in Chacham Sadim, quoted in other places, not to have flowers in the shul on Shavuos. That was his big thing. That wasn't his big thing, but that was one of the things that's known as being Shita Sagra. So the Moshe was asked about that. Right? Can we have flowers in the shuls on Shavuos? So he points out, the Vilna Gaon said not to do it. Why? Because that's what non-Jews do. And he claimed that this was imported from non-Jews. Because that's what they do on their holiday. That also happens to be close to Shavuos. So he answers by saying that anything that has a reason for it is not prohibited by uvach gusechem lo seglechem. I mean, that's what he explained. He says that is the Shita Sagra, and that is what the Vilna Gaon assumed for himself. But we assume differently. We paskin Shulchan Aruch like the Rama and like the Maharik and like all the people that we've been talking about. Right, we assume like them that the only way it's usher is if there's no reason for it, or if it's priestess, etc. But here there's a reason for it. What's the reason we should have flowers in our shul on Shavuos? Because it looks nice. Besides it looking nice, also because flowers come, you know, Har Sinai, recognize that Har Sinai grew flowers and things like that, right? But that's where our custom comes from to do it. So there is a good reason to do it. So therefore, Rav Moshe writes that he doesn't think that there's a that halacha l'maisa. He said that one could have flowers in the shul on Shavuos. Yes. Oh, that's next week. I think it's next week, right? Presents for Hanukkah and Hanukkah gelt and things like that. It's next week. Yes.
I have a question for Anakin Kohen.
Yeah.
And again, you have, if you see pictures of the Muslims who are praying, or also in other religions that people also do kneeling. So that.
Oh, that's something that we came up for. Bowing is something that we have in our Gemara. We have in the Torah
the
itself talks about Korim.
You know, that's really bad.
Prostration.
Really
bad. Right.
So how do we reconcile that?
Well, because we came up with it first.
Yeah. We were doing it before the Muslims.
We were doing it, right. They stole it from us. So therefore, if it's something, and it's not just something that, first of all, is on the... They might use it for Avodah Zarah, but it's something that's also a directive to us, not just something that was done, it's also a directive, and therefore it's okay. Okay, so bye. I hope this clarified some things. There are plenty of other issues to discuss within the areas of Chukas HaGayim, but in general, actually, I wanted to put this on, I couldn't find it also in the computer, but the Maharam Shik is quoted as one more thing that didn't make the subject list is about having non-Jewish names. Is it okay to have non-Jewish names? So there are those that say, yes, you're allowed to have non-Jewish names. You look in the Gemara, and the Gemara, they had non-Jewish names, and you're allowed to have non-Jewish names. But the Maharam Shik said that he was on the side that one shouldn't do it. And he was on and said, why do you need all these non-Jewish names for? We don't have enough nice Jewish names that you can name your children. So that's also something to keep in mind here, that yes, maybe whatever the limitations are of the prohibition of Chukas HaGayim might be in effect, but as the Rambam wrote in the beginning of this year, right, there should be something we should look to for our own benefit, not just looking outwards, but looking inwards as well, for how we could benefit from our own identity. Yes?
So the bottom line is we can be slaves to fashion as long as we're modest. Is that the bottom line?
And there's a reason for it. So some fashionable things like those slap bracelets, right? So I have a claim on those slap bracelets that those might be a problem. I mean, there's no other reason for those. What? Whatever. Amongst us teachers, those are the things you have to worry about. But those kinds of things maybe are a problem. But fashionable, if it's fashionable, as long as it looks, as long as it's sanua and there's reasonable, then it's all right. Yeah. No, but it might be, there's no, it might be stupid. All right. Ad Khan, Yeshka, thank you everybody for coming.